are now in the second installment of the tale, The Loan, which, as you will recall, we began last week with the story of Rab Zev, a wealthy merchant who was approached by a nondescript and totally anonymous wealthy individual who asked Rab Zev for a loan of 500 ruble without identifying himself or without giving him a place where he lived or anything of the like. Rab Zev said, after he was impressed by the man, that he would have to give him an answer in 3 days. Rab Zev went to the Baal Shem Tov, as he was a chos of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov said to Rab Zev to provide the loan. Rab Zev did so. The man merely signed the paper stating the amount without anything else. And that was the last that Rab Zev ever heard from that individual. Rab Zev grew wealthier, and the matter of the loan, which was never repaid, did not bother him as he grew in wealth. However, as time went on, there was an unfortunate blood libel against the Jews in Rab Zev's area. Rab Zev went to the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov told him no more nor less than to go to Rome and to have the decree annulled by none other than the Pope. This was a very, very difficult journey, fraught with danger. Rab Zev was attacked many a time on the way. Finally, as he was approaching the outskirts of Rome, he was surrounded by an angry mob that sought to kill him. A count heard the commotion, came out of his castle with his retinue, and said to the peasants that he himself would kill Rab Zev, and he took Rab Zev into his chamber, and we are presently at that point where Rab Zev is standing before the count, not knowing whether his life will be spared and he will be able to successfully conclude the mission that the Baal Shem Tov set him on to save the Jews of that community, or, God forbid, this would be as far as his life would go. As Rab Zev was being led to the count's palace, he kept on saying Tilim and reminding himself of the bracha of the Baal Shem Tov, and by the time he stood before the count, Rab Zev was serene and whatever fate would come to him, but ever confident in the bracha of the Baal Shem Tov. The count, on his part, was equally at ease. There was no sign of hatred or anger on the face of the individual who had guaranteed the mob that he would kill the Jew for them. Rather, the count asked the Jew to sit down, and he did so in a very friendly manner and began speaking with him. Seeing how Rab Zev was so composed, he asked him, "Tell me, where are you going? What can you possibly be doing that you are risking your life coming in these parts? Everybody knows that a Jew is not allowed entry into miles around Rome, and surely not into Rome. You must be here for something very important. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this." Rab Zev replied, "Yes, I know, I'm aware of the danger, but I've got something very, very important that I must achieve. And so, I am readily risking my life for the purpose of a task which is far greater and much more significant than my own puny life." And he began telling the count about the horrible blood libel and the decree against the Jewish people that they were soon to have to move lock, stock, and barrel, whatever they could take with them, from the place where they lived, and they were being banished from the entire country. And Sir Rab Zev said, "I'm risking my life in order to save the lives of my people, who are totally innocent and wholly blameless of these horrendous and groundless and baseless charges that were made against them. It's a sad fate of our people that from time to time these ugly decrees and these ugly blood libels rear their heads. And right now, all my people are facing banishment from their land if I do not succeed in my mission in intervening on their behalf before the Pope. And that is why I placed my life in danger, because this is the only way out of this horrible situation. Rav Zev saw how the Count became more and more interested in his tale, and Rav Zev began unfolding more details of how the poor Jews were being treated in a merciless fashion for no good reason at all. The Count's sympathy grew as the story continued. And when the Jew, Rav Zev, finished his tale, the Count said to him, "Take a good look at me. Don't you recognize me?" Rav Zev looked at the Count, but couldn't for the life of him ever remember having seen him. "Don't you remember a certain loan of 500 rubles that you once gave to an anonymous nobleman?" the Count said. And Rav Zev, hearing that, remembered the loan so long ago that he had given and which he had never received payment for and which had long had left his mind. "I am that very person," said the Count. "First of all, I want to thank you for your kindness. At that time I needed the money and I was embarrassed to reveal that I was in such desperate straits, and I couldn't think of anybody else but you, who had such a good name as and reputation as a kind and benevolent gentleman, as somebody who would be kind enough to see me through in my difficulty. I always meant to pay you back, but circumstances prevailed, and I was forced to move from where I lived to the outskirts of Rome, and for some reason or other, I never really got a chance to pay you back, and the first thing I want to do is to repay you your money, that which I owe you for such a long time. And as a further sign of my eternal gratitude for your kindness, I'd like to offer my services in helping you to save the poor unfortunate Jews who you are risking your life for. I have the ability to help you to get an audience with the Pope, and I'd advise you to stay with me for a little while, and so I can instruct you exactly how you are to address the Pope with all the proper titles, and how you are to flatter him to win his attention. This Pope is a vain one, and he must be constantly flattered and honored, and by doing so, you will have a good chance that your request will be granted. Otherwise, you really do not have much of a chance, because the Pope is known for his anti-Semitic ways, and your chances that he will do something on behalf of the Jewish people is slim indeed. But if you approach him in the right way, the manner that I will teach you, you do have a chance." And so he said to Rav Zev, "Remain here for a few days, and I will train you in the ways of the Vatican and how to behave in the Pope's presence." Rav Zev could hardly express his thanks enough. And during the next few days, he was taught the title and the various things that one needs to address the head of the Catholic Church. Of course, Rav Zev took care not to venture forth from the manor, and when the Count left in his own coach, no one was the wiser that it contained an additional passenger, no less, a Jew, our very own Rav Zev. The Count, on his part, had succeeded in the previous days in penetrating the bureaucracy that surrounded the Pope and in obtaining an appointment with him. And as that day came and Rav Zev was hidden in the coach of the Count, they came up to the Vatican and the two men entered the antechamber before the time of the appointment, and they received dirty looks from the noblemen who were waiting their turn, because, as mentioned last week, everybody was able to see that although Rav Zev had tried to disguise himself with non-Jewish clothing, that this was the face and the appearance and the sanctity of a Jew. But when the Count showed his papers that he had obtained an audience with the Pope, the people who were waiting there, as well as the other priests, just ground their teeth, and they could do nothing about it. The crucial moment finally arrived, and the two men were ushered into the presence of the Pope. Rav Zev began with a very, very flowery introduction and praising the Pope, something which pleased the Pope to no end. After giving that flowery introduction, Rav Zev did his best to try to arouse compassion in this particular anti-Semitic Pope for the tragic fate of his people, who were blameless in this heinous accusation which was charged against them, and beseeched the Pope that he should use his good office to annul this horrible decree. "But what can I possibly do?" the Pope smiled in hypocritical sympathy, spreading his palms out in helplessness. "The papers are all signed and sealed. I am powerless to revoke them. Before you came with your patron, the Count, I looked into the situation. I had a feeling that if a Jew is coming to see me, that there must be some accusation about the Jews. And I've had all the papers brought before me. Take a look," he said to Rav Zev. "Here are all the affidavits of the witnesses where they say that they found that Jews had killed a Gentile child to use his blood in the matzahs, and their decision was reached by the local priest, and then by the local bishop, and then the council of bishops and the council of cardinals, and I cannot overrule all these decisions." "But sir," the Jew pleaded, Rav Zev said with tears streaming down his cheeks, "you surely have the power to do that which is right. You have the ability to save innocent victims from such a horrendous fate. You say you can't do anything? Is there anybody that can really tell you what you must or must not do? Surely if the Jews are innocent, then, and you, when you render a decision and it comes to light that they are truly innocent, which is not hard to do, because in fact you know as well as I do that they are innocent, everybody will praise you for your sympathy to mankind and your sense of dedication to justice and fairness for all, and there you will be applauded as a righteous individual." Rav Zev's flattery won its way into the Pope's heart. But the Pope, although now leaning toward helping Rav Zev in his cause, was not yet convinced that he could find a loophole. And so he said to Rav Zev, but here, look, the decision of the council. How can I overrule that? True, your words touch me deeply, but my hands are tied. I really don't know how to help you out. Rav Zev thought for a moment. He had come to the crucial time, and he had to come up with a good answer. And so Rav Zev said to the Pope, has it not occurred many times in history that false accusations and slanderous accusations such as these were made against the Jewish people? Might this not be the case here? And could you not bring it out to the council that although they relied on testimony, but the testimony was tainted, and since the testimony was tainted, the entire incident is tainted? Yes, said the Pope, you have a point, but what can I do about a decision that has arrived by an elected body? How can the accusation possibly be disproved to their satisfaction? Rav Zev tried again. Sir, he said, you have the power to promote justice. You are famous throughout the world for your sense of justice and that you use your power judiciously. What better time than now that to overrule even a council decision in order that you can show that your sense of justice and fairness is something which is so great that it will even overwhelm a previous decision. The Pope could not help being impressed and moved by the Jews' sincere flattery. And suddenly the Pope spoke up. I just had an interesting idea. It might just work in this case. In my library, in the Vatican Library, there's a historical record which dates back for hundreds and hundreds of years. It contains histories of many trials and many allegations, some proved to be false, and others which were never misproved. If you are willing, said the Pope to Rav Zev, I can take this record before the Council of Bishops and Cardinals and choose a random sample to be read before the representatives. It will serve as a kind of lottery. If the story which is read proves favorable to your cause, we will accept it and nullify the decree. But if not, and the Pope left the rest unsaid. Rav Zev saw that he wouldn't be able to get any further than this, and he said, I have no choice but to agree to this plan. At least, since this is going to be randomly opened, we are leaving our decision to Hashem, we're leaving it up to God, and I have faith that the outcome will be favorable to us. And so it was that the Pope called together a special session of the Council of Cardinals and said that this Jew appeared to me before me, and he seemed sincere, and that the charges are groundless. Nevertheless, I know that you have made your investigations and you have based it on testimony. And yet, in my records, reviewing the history of such accusations and accusations similar to that, I have found that there were times that these accusations were proved to be false and groundless. I suggested to the man that why don't we randomly open one of these historical volumes and see what will be the outcome of reading one of these stories. And if the story will show that a previous accusation was groundless, this will serve as a sign that this too is a baseless accusation, and we will nullify the decree and annul the previous decree. But if it was not disproved in the story we are going to be reading, then the Jew's fate is sealed. Unable to openly defy the Pope, the College of Cardinals murmured their assent, and it was Pope called for the volumes to be brought before them, and servants brought many, many heavy tomes where there was laboriously inscribed within them the various situations and decrees against the Jewish people, which had come, all of them, from false accusations, but some of them had been able to be disproved, and some were never disproved, and it was now up to see by Goyle, by lot, which was going to be read, and the thousands and thousands of Jews had their fate hanging in the balance of what book was going to be opened and what story would be chosen by the Pope to be read. And the story which was read by the Pope and what happened to the Jewish people, whether they were spared or whether their fate was sealed to this horrendous exile from their country where they would lose everything that they had, this, in Yirtzeh Hashem, we will relate next week in the part 3 in the continuing installation of the tale of the loan.